From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you. Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Oh, yes. We got Mike Rowe from the Discovery Channel program Dirty Jobs. He'll be here to see if he can handle the dirtiest job of all, answering our questions. By the way, little known fact about Mike Rowe, he started Dirty Jobs on public radio. That's true. It was a public radio program at first. It was basically, at that time, just an hour of him trying to milk Garrison Keillor. It really... just a lot of uncomfortable silence, really. It wasn't much of anything. Well, we'll be keeping it clean on this week's show, so give us a call and answer some questions. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey, this is Ryan from Somerville.
Hey, Ryan, Somerville, Ma?
Somerville, Ma.
I love Somerville, Ma. I used to spend a summer getting drunk on cheap beer in Davis Square. Love that place.
That's right where I am.
Is that what you do?
Pretty much.
Oh, yeah. Well, Ryan, let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a comedian whose first CD, I Heart Jokes, is out now. She's performing in San Francisco at the beautiful Palace of Fine Arts on Saturday, December 18th. Ms. Paula Poundstone.
Ryan.
Next is one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column. Ms. Roxanne Roberts is here.
Hello.
Hi.
And finally, it's the man behind the podcast, Taking the World by Storm, Too Beautiful to Live, Mr. Luke Burbank.
Hey, Ryan.
How's it going, Luke?
Ryan, you're going to play Who's Carl? This time, Carl Castle, of course, is going to start with three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain two of them. Do that, you'll win our prize. Carl Castle's voice on your voicemail. You ready to go?
You bet.
Here we go. Here's your first quote.
Well, don't worry about it. You should see what we say about you.
That was Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. She was relating the response she got from a foreign diplomat after a big document dump from what organization?
That would be WikiLeaks.
WikiLeaks, yes. This week we got deeply classified state secrets, the lighter side. Thanks to WikiLeaks, we now know American diplomats behave much as we expected they do, like a bunch of junior high school kids texting each other under their desks during social studies class. It's like Us Magazine for news junkies. Oh, look, foreign leaders, they're just like us. Kim Jong-il is fat. Sarkozy is insecure. Ahmadinejad is crazy. Also, and this may be the cruelest one of all, Angela Merkel is, quote, uncreative. German diplomats protested. That's not fair. You should see her one-woman show. The Vagina Merkelogs. No, it's very moving. Really.
I was just getting milking Garrison Keillor out of my head. And now I have the Merkelogs to deal with.
It's about self-empowerment, damn it. Don't you go there. There's more from the WikiLeaks files. Muammar Gaddafi of Libya always travels with a, quote, voluptuous Ukrainian nurse who, quote, knows his routine, unquote. Yeah, she knows it. The rest of us can guess it. These gossipy revelations prompted outrage from other world leaders. Nobody told me we can get voluptuous Ukrainian nurses. What's going on?
How many were there that were available this time?
Hundreds of thousands of documents.
And so one of them really did say that Angela Merkel was not creative?
Yes.
Wow.
A lot of these documents.
Risk averse, right?
Risk averse.
Yeah.
A lot of these.
Risk averse.
Risk averse.
Oh,
yes.
No.
That's why it took her so long. To convince her to do her one-woman show.
But that's what it said. It just said Angela Merkel is uncreative. Was it in a context?
Yeah, it was in the context of...
So they had been doing something together that required creativity?
Yeah, they had been making collages,
so they were
apparently.
Coloring
they were
or something?
Around, yeah.
But these are all the sorts of dispatches where the American diplomats are presumably sharing their deep thoughts and insights
right.
back home.
That's what I'm
yeah.
saying, though, is how is this deep?
Well, maybe the theory here is, okay, so how do we get to Gaddafi, for example? It's like, okay, he has actually four Ukrainian nurses.
Four Ukrainian nurses?
Yeah, but
listen,
his favorite is...
five would be excessive.
So maybe the theory here is that you embed a American spy pretending to be a voluptuous blonde Ukrainian nurse.
Aren't we devious?
You're voluptuous or you're not voluptuous. You don't pretend.
Wonder bra.
If you could pretend to be voluptuous, I believe I would be pretending.
You have not been in a singles bar for years, have you?
Did you think I look like this because I'm a stickler for honesty?
Ryan, you still with us?
You bet.
All right. I worry sometimes. All right, Ryan, here's your next quote.
We have a gay guy in the unit. He's big, he's mean, and he kills lots of bad guys. No one cared that he was gay.
That was a special ops fighter, quoted in a Pentagon study issued this week about what?
Don't ask, don't tell.
Right. The exhaustive report from the Pentagon found that most of the active military and their spouses don't care, really, about allowing gays to serve openly, and they wouldn't mind it if they did. The only resistance remaining to changing the policy comes first from the Marine Corps, because there's nothing at all gay about really muscular guys with short hair and tattoos and a thing for travel. And more inexplicably, from Senator John McCain. Nobody quite knows why Senator McCain is so doggedly against letting gays serve openly. Everybody knows that McCain served with gays himself during the siege of Troy. And you know what went on in those tents, you know? McCain has been moving the goalposts on this issue for a long time. For a long time he said that he'd be okay with letting gays serve as long as the Pentagon said it was okay. Now they've said it's okay. McCain's like, fine, but what do the other shapes think? is the triangle all right with this?
You know the triangle's going to be fine with
it. Yeah, I guess so. Not the square, though.
It's a given.
Yeah. All right, Ryan, here's your last quote.
Sorry, no E.T.
That was one of many headlines we saw after who made a big, if still underwhelming, scientific announcement this week.
Oh, NASA?
Yes, very good. NASA, yes. Very good. NASA said that it was going to have a big announcement about extraterrestrial life on Thursday. So all week, people wonder, what's it going to be? Has life been discovered on another planet? Has there been a message from space? As it turns out, scientists found a really weird bacteria in a lake in California. They coaxed it in the lab so that its chemistry was slightly different than what was previously thought possible for living things. That's the big news. An alternative lifestyle in California. Of course, now that it's out, the bacteria says it just wants to be left alone and have the same rights as all other bacteria. That's fine. But John McCain says he still doesn't think they can serve openly in the military.
The thing had arsenic instead of the thing that
phosphates
instead of phosphates.
Yes, that's arsenic. The big news.
It's arsenic is part of it.
Sort of. It's kind of complicated. All life on Earth uses basically five different elements as its building blocks.
I know that.
Yeah. And this bacteria, through manipulation in the lab, ended up using arsenic instead of phosphate. So there you go. And that's interesting because it means that life could take a slightly different form.
So it's arsenic, chocolate.
Yes.
Caffeine.
Exactly. Pop-Tarts.
If I was one of the scientists and I was, you know, I'd pulled this thing out of Lake Mono, which is the lake they brought out of Mono Lake, arsenic would not be the thing I would try to feed it right away.
Yeah. I think you'd start it off on something nicer. Like cranberry juice.
Buttermilk.
Yeah.
Something. Arsenic seems like, isn't that
hot
poisonous?
Well, it is.
Two of the scientists were Cary Grant's aunts.
Then they tried Old Lace.
Yeah. Carl, how did Ryan do in our quiz?
Ryan, you had a perfect game. Three correct answers.
Whoa.
So you win our prize.
Well done. Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Luke, it's gift-buying season, and thanks to budget cutbacks in Britain, you can now purchase your own what for that special person on your shopping list?
Oh, budget cutback. So it's some kind of a thing that the local government would probably provide?
The government, yeah. The government wants to get rid of it. They had it. They want to get rid of it. You can buy it.
Can I have a hint?
Well, it'd be great, for example, for staging backyard reenactments of Top Gun, but you'd need a really big backyard.
Fighter jets?
Bigger.
Aircraft carriers?
Yes. One in particular, an aircraft carrier. The HMS Invincible saw action in the Falklands. It was once the flagship of the British fleet, and now it's being auctioned online like a giant steel beanie baby. So you can get a gift that won't fit under the tree, but you can bet it'll get that smug guy down the street to stop bragging about the boat in his driveway.
Yeah. It sort of does beg the question of what do you do with an ex-aircraft carrier?
Well, it's even tougher because it comes without an engine. So if you're going to buy it, make sure your pickup truck has a trailer.
It's assumed that this would only be sold to another country, right? I mean, there's no private market for something like this. And then does that raise questions if the shipping address is like Waziristan, cave number 8, is that like an issue because it might be going to bin Laden?
It's fine with me. It has no engine.
Plus, there's not a lot of water in the middle of Afghanistan.
It'll be like, it's the Al-Qaeda aircraft carrier. They'll be the ones rowing it up to New York Harbor.
It is time now for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, I'm John Chaney.
Hey, John, where are you calling from?
Charleston, South Carolina.
Charleston, South Carolina. We are actually going to Charleston, South Carolina in the spring. We're very excited about that.
Mm-hmm. We're excited to have you.
When we are in Charleston, what should we do there?
We got a lot of good restaurants.
Good restaurants? A lot
of good food.
Oh, yeah, good food. Is like a favorite activity that Charlestonians like to do besides eating?
Drinking.
Okay. We'll make some time for that. John, welcome to the show. You're going to play the game where you have to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is John's topic?
So, little Oedipus, what are you going to be when you grow up?
Growing up in the shadow of a famous parent can put loads of pressure on a child. But this week we learned about one such child of a celebrity emerging to forge their own identity. Our panelists are going to tell you 3 stories of offspring springing off on their own. Choose the real story, you'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine. You ready to play?
Yep.
All right. Let's hear first from Luke Burbank.
Billy Blanks Jr. grew up with all the amenities and perks you'd expect for a kid whose dad invented Tybo, the revolutionary total body fitness system. But at some point, Billy Jr. was forced to ask himself, what's my contribution to the world? And then it hit him. He'd forge his own name by inventing a questionable workout system and selling it on late night television. And thus, Cardioki was born. Combining cardio, body sculpting, and the singing of karaoke, Cardioki relies on the same principle that the military uses when it has its recruits chant during exercises. Blanks Jr. insists that his DVD program is just the thing to help get people of all fitness levels to build their stamina and lose those inches. Just make sure you've consulted a doctor and a musicologist before attempting any workout program that requires the singing of I Will Always Love You, because it gets really high at the end.
Cardioki, the new late-night exercise fad from Billy Blanks Jr. Your next story of a child making their own way comes from Roxanne Roberts.
After years of avoiding anything related to Gilligan's Island, Caprice Chase has finally embraced her inner Ginger. The daughter of actress Tina Louise, who played this sexy movie star on the iconic sitcom, is a pastry chef who opened a bakery in Brooklyn last year as Ginger's Bread. Caprice dyed her own hair red and always wears a tight gold dress behind the counter. Everything on the menu contains ginger, gingerbread, ginger ice cream, ginger tea, and the house specialty, a brown sugar island with gingerbread huts, spearmint palm trees, and sugar figures of Gilligan, Marianne, the professor, and the rest of the gang. She's even convinced her reclusive 75-year-old mother to sign autographs at the shop every Friday, yes, for a 3-hour tour.
It's gingerific. Tina Louise's daughter opens a ginger-themed bakery, and your last story of celebrity spawn comes from Paula Poundstone.
TSA employee Tom Wilson is both the star and creator of a training film and program that he hopes the TSA will utilize, which features Mr. Wilson as a comical and oddly familiar TSA supervisor admonishing his trainees not to squeeze the travelers during the pat-downs. Mr. Wilson's father, Dick Wilson was better known as Mr. Whipple, the grocery store manager in the Charmin toilet paper commercials, who was forever busting gaggles of women, clogging the aisles, and damaging the merchandise by standing around squeezing packages of the irresistibly soft Charmin. My father left behind a legacy that I believe can be just what the TSA and the traveling public need right now, says Mr. Wilson. People think we want to touch them and probe them and look at them naked, and we don't. It's just a job that we are very lucky to have. I think my training film can go a long ways towards relieving some of the tension. It is serious, but it is also entertaining. My father would have liked that.
All righty then. One of these children of a real-life celebrity has their own career. Is it from Luke Burbank, Billy Blanks Jr. doing his own exercise craze, cardio-ki? From Roxanne Roberts, the daughter of Tina Louise, known as Ginger on Gilligan's Island, opening a ginger-themed shop? Or from Paula Poundstone, Mr. Whipple's son, now a TSA agent, doing films demonstrating how people should not squeeze those packages? Which of these is the real story of a celebrity offspring?
I'm going to have to go with Gilligan's Island.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to go with Roxanne's story of Tina Louise's daughter and her ginger-themed shop.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, we were fortunate enough to get this celebrity junior on the phone.
People love to sing. People love to dance. There are people who sing karaoke who shouldn't be singing, but they just have fun.
That was Billy Blanks Jr., the creator of Cardioke. I'm sorry to say, this is. I'm sorry for two reasons. I'm sorry you didn't win. I'm also sorry we cannot visit. The Ginger Shop in Brooklyn, because that would have been great. You did earn a point for Roxanne, though, who's very happy about it, as she always is. Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Bye bye. And now the game where we invite people on who've done a lot to do one more thing. It's called Not My Job. Every week, we at Wait Wait get emailed suggestions of people our listeners would like to hear playing this game. And over the past couple of years, there is one person who has been suggested far, far more often than any other. So ladies and gentlemen, because we could no longer defy your will, we are pleased to welcome the creator and host of Discovery Channel's Dirty Jobs, Mr. Mike Rowe. Mike Rowe, welcome to Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you. Sounds as though you're in receipt of my mother's emails.
Well, we were going to ask about that, because what I said was true. You know, every week we'd get maybe one email suggesting this guy, another email suggesting that woman, and 10 emails saying, you should have Mike Rowe on. So we began to suspect an orchestrated campaign.
You know, you really can't put it past me, but in all candor, I know nothing about it.
Okay.
My mother, however, she has written to everyone who has ever had the questionable taste to hire me, starting with QVC back in the mid-'80s,
yeah.
And then just, you know, she's just not shy about firing off a tersely worded memo to the man in charge.
Mike, what did you do on QVC?
You have to imagine in those days, kind of like a condemned carnival midway.
Right.
And,
you guys sold those?
We would sell anything that you could remove from an acrylic box with a hook, you know. I mean, it could be your health team infrared pain reliever. It could be your Amcor negative ion generator. It could be a collectible doll. I mean, this is 1989, I guess 1990. There was no training program at the time. If you could talk about a pencil for between 6 and 8 minutes, I'm not making this up, you were hired and essentially allowed to try and figure out the business of live TV and selling stuff to a narcoleptic and codependent audience in the middle of the night. And that's how we rolled.
That's great.
And how did
how did your career at QVC come to an end? I mean,
it actually ended on several occasions. the first incident involved a collectible nun doll.
Yeah.
Which, if you wound her up, she played Climb Every Mountain, which to me is already funny. And this thing was presented to me actually in a prime time shift. I was filling in for someone, so there were more people watching than normal, and the stakes were very high, and I could not find the winding mechanism on this doll. And my search for it became accelerated and frantic. It wasn't located between the shoulder blades where any self-respecting manufacturer of a nun doll would put it. What I found was a protrusion in the small of her back, but technically it was, I mean, it was her butt. And impossible to wind without reaching in, you know.
And of course, makes sense to me.
I had to wait for the technical director to change his shot to a display nun over in the light box. So now I'm off camera, but my mic is open, and I invert the nun in my lap, and I push her habit down. And, you know, anatomically speaking, this woman is unnecessarily detailed.
Right.
And everybody...
I mean, for a nun...
For a nun, she was smoking.
Yeah.
And she was also upside down in my lap, and... I was peering over her feet, winding her up, and the technical director cut back to me. And so in, I don't know, maybe a few hundred thousand homes, I was sitting there with this heavenly host between my legs that appeared to have fallen like a lawn dart and was entirely naked, and my thumb was not where it should be at all. So
happens
it
to
ended
us.
Quickly and badly.
Right. Well, I want you to tell us about Dirty Jobs because no public radio listener will admit to ever watching TV. I've noticed that. So tell us about it. You do Dirty Jobs.
I do. Dirty Jobs is maybe the simplest show in the history of TV, with the possible exception of The Gong Show. I go around the country. We've shot in every state. And we spend a day with people who do jobs that are dirty or dangerous or ridiculous or difficult. And, of course... endless opportunities for exploding toilets and misadventures in animal husbandry.
So, got to ask this question, which was the dirtiest of the jobs?
Oh, of the 300, I would say for pure epic horror. There's a thing called a lift pump, and it's at a wastewater treatment plant.
Oh, yeah.
And a lift pump weighs about 4 tons, and it sits in the bottom of a 5-story silo.
Yeah.
And when the lift pump ruptures, the silo fills with whatever you flush.
Yeah.
And to make a long story short, you swim through the muck to the pump.
Wow.
You crawl on top. A crane lowers a cable. You affix it. You hang on. And the sound that a broken lift pump will make when it's hoisted out of the silo and breaks the seal of poo that was holding it to the floor will haunt your dreams.
Have you ever done a job that you had no idea existed before you went to do it?
Oh, yeah. Jeez. Let's see. Noodling was a good one.
Noodling?
Back in season one.
Noodling that sounds innocent.
It does sound innocent, except for the fact that it's insane. And it involves catching fish with your bare hands. And it's illegal in 46 states, but not Oklahoma. And that's where we went, to Shawnee, Oklahoma. And
why would you do it?
Well, because it's actually a job. The people who fish this way fish really, really effectively, and they can catch hundreds of catfish, where guys with a rod and a reel might only catch a couple of dozen.
Yeah. So what makes it illegal?
Well, what makes it illegal is that it's really crazy to do, because you're in a little bayou or a swamp or some backwater up to your neck, and you're rooting around with your hands. And when you find a hole in the mud, you stick your hand in it, and you hope something bites you.
Oh.
And if it's a catfish, you grab it by the jaw, and then you pull it out. And congratulations, you've noodled. But if it's a snapping turtle or a water moccasin or who knows what else, then you die.
Hey, you must come home smelling of all kinds of interesting things.
Well, the first time I knew that the smell was really going to be a problem on a personal level, I was flying home from Austin, where I went to this place called Bracken Cave, where they have about 40 million Mexican free-tail bats. And I went in with a cave biologist. That was the job we were profiling. And we sunk in a giant soup of guano.
Yeah.
And guano, in a bat cave anyhow, is filled with dermestid flesh-eating beetles. And the bats over your head are constantly defecating and urinating and giving birth, so there's this just a shower of urine, and we are covered in the worst of the worst. And, well, I guess the point of the story is that night...
I was wondering.
Stupidly.
Yes.
Stupidly.
Stupidly.
I
formal ball.
Well, look, I was wearing my favorite pair of khakis. I know that sounds ridiculous, but I had a nice pair of pants, and I just balled them up, and I threw them in my suitcase. And the next morning, going through security, you know, they dust the bag for, I don't know, explosives. Everything just went crazy, and then they opened the bag, and the terminal cleared out. The smell was just extraordinary.
I can imagine. Wow. So have you ever tried the dirty job of hosting a public radio show? You think you'd be up for that?
Some things are simply too hideous.
I think you Well, Mike Rowe, we are delighted to have you with us, and we're delighted that you're in another room so we cannot smell you.
Thank you.
But we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
The name is Clean. Mr. Clean.
You do dirty jobs, so we were certain you've never heard of this guy. A certain Mr. Clean, both the name of and fake spokesperson for a cleaning product from Procter & Gamble. We're going to ask you three questions about the shiny, pated, neat freak. If you get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice in the home answering machine. You ready to play?
Mm-hmm. I'm ready.
All right. Who is Mike Rowe playing for, Carl?
Mike is playing for Julie Spears of St. Louis, Missouri.
All right. Here's your first question, Mike. Many people don't realize that Mr. Clean has a first name. In 1962, a nationwide contest ended up giving him what first name? Was it A, Mr. Aloysius Anthony Clean, B, Mr. Veritably Clean, or C, Mr. Chad Clean?
What was that first one?
Aloysius Anthony.
That's too precious. What was the last one?
Chad.
In the middle of Mr.
Veritably Clean.
Yeah, I think he was veritable.
You're right. He's veritably clean.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have guessed it.
Only his
he is my nemesis, by the way.
I'm sure he is. All right, second question now. Mr. Clean, as you apparently now know, has always been helpful and concerned with cleanliness. In 1965, though, he had a change in personality. What happened? A, he became mean Mr. Clean. B, he became sad Mr. Clean. Or C, he became briefly and disastrously Mrs. Clean.
Was there mean in there?
There was. Mean Mr. Clean.
Mean Mr. Clean. Does anything else rhyme in any of the choices?
No. Sad Mr. Clean sounds poignant.
Yeah. He was mean.
He was mean.
He was mean Mr. Clean.
He
when
was
in doubt,
mean.
Go with something that rhymes.
He was mean Mr. Clean. That's right. The idea was that he was mean to dirt. He was intolerant of grime. He was cruel. Mm-hmm. All right. This is great. You seem to know a lot about this. We'll see if you can go for perfect. Back in 2000, an Ask Mr. Clean website went live, and Procter & Gamble promised he would finally address what frequently asked question. A, are you Mr. Clean toxic to pets? Are you an albino? Or C, are you gay?
Why does it have to be just one?
Why could be? Curious about all three.
Yeah, it's got to be pets.
No.
No, it's gay.
Of course it's gay.
Hey, it's
gay.
Two out of three, right? Who cares?
It is. There's the attitude that got him to the top of QVC. Yes. No, the answer is, the question was, are you gay? Because people have been wondering for years. He's muscular. He's got an earring. He's a neat freak. But the answer is, no, he's not gay. He's a fictional cartoon spokesman. Carl, how did Mike Rowe do in our quiz?
Well, Mike had two correct answers, Peter, and that's good enough to win for Julie Spears.
Congratulations.
All right, Julie.
Well done, sir.
Thank you.
Mike Rowe is the host of Dirty Jobs, airing in the Discovery Channel Tuesday nights through the end of the year. Mike Rowe, thank you so much for joining us. What a pleasure. Great to have you. In just a minute, Carl is sent to The Hague for committing war rhymes in our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Roxana Jewelry Store in Wisconsin is taking a fresh approach this holiday season. They're offering 50% off everything to give you a chance to stock up on jewelry in time for what?
Okay, something having to do with the Green Bay Packers?
Nothing to do with the Green Bay Packers.
This is Wisconsin.
It is in Wisconsin,
right.
But that is not relevant to the answer per se.
The inheritance tax?
No.
Okay. I'm thinking of reasonable things that you'd want to stock up for.
Why would we ever ask you about a reasonable thing on this radio program?
Okay.
Have you ever listened to this radio program?
The apocalypse.
Yes. Thank
no!
you.
Yes.
Wow.
The ad for LTD jewelry begins, as many do, with images of the earth ravaged by raging hellfire. Then Larry Falter, owner of the jewelry store, comes on and cheerfully says the end times are upon us, but, quote, nonetheless, here and now, if you want jewelry, I've got access to millions. For as it says in the book of Leviticus, quote, and when the rapture cometh, the righteous shall riseth unto heaven, but not before getting some unfreaking believable deals. Paula, after carefully inspecting newspapers, history books, and public records spanning the 20th century, a team of researchers at Cambridge University in Britain are confident in their claim that April 11th, 1954 is significant for what reason?
It was the most boring day ever.
Exactly right, yes. Paula Poundstone.
I gotta tell you, I did nothing that whole day.
Yeah. 300 million historical facts have been cataloged in the 20th century, but not one of them happened on April 11th, 1954. Nothing important happened, nobody famous died, nobody significant was born. Nothing happened. Now, maybe you heard this, and you're thinking, wait a second, I was born on April 11th, 1954. Are you saying I'm insignificant? And of course, we're not saying that. Science is saying that.
But we only know it's boring based on recorded history. I bet you there are a lot of boring days before we wrote down what we did on those days.
I'd say most days. Like the Dark Ages?
My
no.
guess
Come
is
on.
The first day of recorded history was probably the most boring day because they were so bored. They said, let's just write. There's nothing else to do. Let's just.
And on the second day, someone sent a cable talking crap about somebody two caves over.
Yeah. Luke, Brazilian police and army officials busted a notorious drug gang last weekend. They seized 11 tons of pot, an arsenal of weapons, and they raided the home of the vicious drug lord known as Pazau, where they made what shocking discovery?
By the way, best drug lord name ever.
Pazau,
right?
I agree with you.
Like, at that point, if your parents name you Pazau, you either become a male stripper or a drug lord. I mean, it's not even your fault. I think that should legally be a defense.
Right.
I saw a photo of this thing that you're asking about, Peter, and
yes.
It's so amazing.
It's great.
He has a huge Justin Bieber mural.
He does.
In his house.
He does. Well done, Luke.
And it looks like Jay Leno. If Justin Bieber was Jay Leno's son. I mean, it's also the most awful Justin Bieber mural you've ever seen.
Is this a pre-haircut, or is this a painting?
It's like a painting.
Big, lurid painting of Justin Bieber taking up a whole wall in his mansion. You know that old saying, make sure you wear clean underwear in case you're in an accident? Well, also remember to paint over your wall-sized portraits of the Biebster in case your mansion built with drug money is raided by the cops. Now, Pazau looks like a pretty silly drug lord. Despite his impressive trafficking ring and reputation as a ruthless killer, Pazau will now be known only because he suffers from Bieber fever.
This baffles me on a number of levels. First of all, I thought that the only people that really were insane about him were like 11 to 4, or 8-year-olds.
See, I think this is the takeaway, though, right? And it's actually, I think, a hopeful thing for the rest of us, which is this was not for Pazau. This was for Pazau's 12-year-old daughter, which means even if you're a Brazilian drug pin, you're terrified of your 12-year-old daughter and would basically paint a horrible Justin Bieber mural in your drug king house so she will, like, say I love you on Christmas.
Paula, Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi, who was like Hugh Hefner without the taste and restraint, just spent...
What if he hears that?
That was in the cable.
I know. Anyway, Silvio Berlusconi just spent $92,000 in Italian taxpayer money to repair a statue in his office. It's a statue of Mars, the Roman god of war. What part of the statue did he pay to have reattached to it?
Not the genitalia.
Yes, his little Italian sausage right there, yes.
Oh.
The Italian prime minister, whose own little prime minister must be due for replacement by now, has angered taxpayers with what they call a frivolous use of state funds. The statue is 2,000 years old, but somewhere along the line in those years, it lost its manhood. It's kind of a penis de Milo, if you will. Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, you can call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can click the Contact Us link at our website, which is waitwait.npr.org. You can also find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, and our two shows coming up in Miami this February at the Arsht Center for the Performing Arts. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Jessica calling from Palm Beach, Florida.
Hey, beautiful Palm Beach. Now, are you in Palm Beach or are you in West Palm?
I'm in North Palm Beach.
North Palm Beach. What do you do there?
I'm currently working as a manatee observer.
Are you now?
They're not going to observe themselves.
Yeah.
Is it true that the myth of mermaids got started because sailors were actually seeing manatees?
Yeah, that's true.
After a few months at sea, they look pretty attractive, apparently. All right, welcome to the show, Jessica. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. Your job, of course, fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks. Do that, you'll be a winner. Here is your first limerick.
When celebs toss their tweets in the litter, the treat is all sweet and not bitter. To raise funds for a cause, they'll let microblogs pause and promise to stay off of...
Twitter?
Yes. An AIDS research fundraiser was supposed to work like this. Celebrities like Lady Gaga stayed away from Twitter starting on Wednesday. And the only thing that could bring them back, donations from the public. The goal, $1 million. The problem is, once the public realized life could be rich and meaningful without momentary updates from Kim Kardashian, they had second thoughts about digital resuscitation. Late in the week, the charity was way below its goal, and organizers are now considering reversing their strategy. Now we're all being asked to donate $1 million, or they will start tweeting again.
This absolutely happened. This was Alicia Keys' charity, the musician. And when people realized that by not raising the money, it would mean Kim Kardashian would stop tweeting, a whole counter movement sprung up to get people to donate money to different AIDS charities.
Right. Here is your next limerick.
Since I drank last night, being a dang rover, I'll invite CU's most helpful gang over. They'll make Bloody Marys. I'll stay sedentary. Together, we'll cure my bad...
hangover?
Yes, for $15 a person. Cheap at the price. University of Colorado's Hangover Helpers will come to your dorm, clean up the mess from the night before, and bring you, your roommates, and that strange person you don't know in your bed breakfast. Co-founder Mark Simon says he started cleaning party houses last year for extra cash and found himself a rich man despite the bad economy. Turns out he had cornered the market for drunk, lazy people living off their parents. It's been just a success. They're expanding their business to include a service where they accompany you on the walk of shame holding up a curtain in front of you.
You couldn't pay me enough to clean up someone else's vomited Four Loko.
I think we got a tip for Mike Rowe.
I think we're ready. I think you have a point. All right. Here is your last limerick.
Just as Botox can handle a frown, our drug turns sad fruit upside down. Our enzyme injection makes apple perfection. The fruit will no longer turn...
brown.
Right. Whether you are a human being or a supermodel, beauty fades unless modern medicine intervenes. The same can now be said for fruit, thanks to a Canadian biotech company hoping to win approval from the USDA for the so-called Botox apple, a standard apple that has been genetically modified so that it never browns. This is good news if you're an apple suffering from vanity, and bad news if you're a human being about to bite into an apple that's been around for longer than you have. Carl, how did Jessica do in our quiz?
Jessica had a perfect game, Peter. Three correct answers. So, Jessica, you win our prize.
Well done, Jessica. All right. Congratulations. Tell the manatees we say hello and thanks for playing.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. And now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Roxanne Roberts and Luke Burbank each has 3 points. Paula Poundstone has 2.
All right. Paula, you are in third place, so the clock will start when I begin your first question. You go first. Fill in the blank. To help balance the budget, President Obama announced plans for a blank for federal workers.
For a price wage freeze?
Yeah, wage freeze. On Thursday, China criticized military maneuvers by the U.S. and Japan as an obstacle to easing tensions between North and South blank.
Korea.
Right. Over Republican objections, the House voted Thursday to extend Bush-era blanks for middle-income families.
Tax cuts.
Right. A dispute between Comcast and Netflix may cause the FCC to change laws governing the blank.
The pay-for-movie stuff.
See, governing the Internet. Buffalo Bills wide receiver Stevie Johnson, who dropped a game-winning touchdown pass on Sunday, went on Twitter later to blame blank.
Greasy palms.
No, he blamed God. Hundreds of motorists were stranded on a western New York highway for hours after a huge blank.
Snowstorm.
Right. For the first time since switching teams, LeBron James played against his old team in blank.
In Cleveland.
Right. A California man is in trouble after he got drunk on a cruise ship traveling full speed ahead and blanked.
Dropped the anchor.
Yes, he did. Rich Ellert was drunk, so he didn't notice or care that the ship was going really fast when he decided to show off his anchor-dropping expertise. Captain was not amused, and not only does Ellert face charges, Isaac, the bartender, has cut him off for the rest of the trip. Carl, how did Paula do?
Paula had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 14 points, and Paula has the lead.
All right. We have flipped a coin, and Roxanne has elected to go last, so Luke, you're up next. Fill in the blank. On Wednesday, the Obama administration said that it would maintain a ban on blanking in the eastern Gulf of Mexico.
Oil drilling.
Right. Rumors circulated this week that the target of the next WikiLeaks dump would be blank.
Bank of America.
Right. On Thursday, the House of Representatives voted to censure 20-term New York Representative blank.
Charlie Rangel.
Right. On Thursday, FIFA announced that Russia and Qatar would host the 2018 and 2022 blank.
World Cups.
Right. The 92nd Street Y in New York City offered an apology and a refund to people who paid to see an interview with Steve Martin because blank.
It went so horribly.
Yes, it was really, really dull. A French electrician revealed this week that he has 271 previously unknown works by the artist blank.
Picasso.
Right. Irish author Rowan Somerville's book, The Shape of Her, was given the dubious honor of winning this year's blank award.
Worst writing about sex.
Indeed. The secret ingredient in a new FDA-approved organic herbal tea promoting weight loss turned out to be blank.
Cocaine.
Exactly right.
Woo! Woo!
A woman in Delaware got in trouble when she failed a drug test after drinking Delice Coca tea. When a doctor tested it, he discovered, quote, it's cocaine. Not a breakdown product of cocaine, but cocaine. The woman said she should have known something was up because instead of having a price tag, the tea had a street value. Carl, how did Luke do in our quiz? Pretty well, it seemed.
He had a perfect game, Peter.
There
8 correct
go.
Answers
well
for
done.
16 more points. Luke now has 19
that
points and the
impressive.
Lead.
Impressive. How many, then, does Roxanne need to get right to win?
She needs at least 8 correct answers to tie.
You can do this.
I knew all of his.
You picked one to go third. All right, here we go.
I know.
For the game, Roxanne. Fill the blank. This week, the White House pushed Congress to extend expiring blank benefits.
Unemployment.
Yes. On Tuesday night, the Senate voted to increase the power of the FDA in a landmark blank safety bill.
Drug.
No, food. Because they pose a strangulation risk, home improvement store Lowe's issued a recall of 11 million blanks.
Blinds.
Right. Best known for his roles in Airplane and Police Squad, actor blank died at age 84.
Leslie Nielsen.
Right. And Minnesota's recount of challenged ballots in its governor's race this week included a ballot in which the voter wrote in blank.
No one.
No, he wrote in who farted. With 10 nominations, rapper Eminem led the pack in this year's blank.
Grammys.
Right. Shockingly, Willie Nelson was arrested last week. After police found blank on his tour bus.
Could it have been marijuana?
Oh, the horror. The co-pilot of an Air India flight inadvertently sent the plane into a nosedive when he tried to blank.
Google Justin Bieber.
No, when he tried to adjust his seat. He just wanted a little more leg room, but when he adjusted his seat, the co-pilot knocked the control column, instantly plunging the plane 2,000 meters straight down. He immediately...
Ooh.
began emergency freakout procedures, completely forgetting how to stop the nosedive, answer the call button, or even let the pilot back in the cockpit. The pilot, who was in the bathroom at the time, eventually got back in, took control of the plane. Carl, did Roxanne do well enough to win?
She needed at least 8 to tie. She had just 5 correct answers. So with 19 points, Luke Burbank is
well done, Luke. Masterfully done. Congratulations, Luke.
Thank you.
In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists to predict what WikiLeaks will leak next. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Overbrook Foundation, supporting CatalogChoice.org, a nonprofit service that allows customers to decide which catalogs to receive in the mail. The Kauffman Foundation, working to grow economies and expand human welfare. Learn more at Kauffman.org. And Plowshares Fund, dedicated to helping build a safe, secure, and nuclear weapon-free world at plowshares.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug, watch out for the unexploded ordnance. Berman, executive producer. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our host manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Blythe Haga. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Lester Larchick and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac here at Chase Bank. And the winner of this week's Name That Crime contest on our blog is Dan Bressler. Go check it out, see what he did. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Whitezin Newhouse. And Lorna White, the senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what will be in the next WikiLeaks leak? Paula Poundstone.
A cable from the Joker comparing Batman and Robin to Putin and Medvedev. And it will destroy the relationship between Batman, Robin, and the Joker.
Roxanne Roberts.
Mars is in Berlusconi's only statue with detachable parts.
I don't know what you mean, but I enjoyed your giggle. Luke Burbank.
Rumors fly and feelings are hurt as they WikiLeaks Sasha and Malia's locker combination. One loves Joan Jonas, one is a Beaver Fever fan.
And if WikiLeaks reveals any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Paula Poundstone, Roxanne Roberts, and Luke Burbank. Thanks to all of you for listening. You've been fabulous. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you right here next week. See you then. This is NPR.